Let the drama kick, the drama kick die. Let the drama kick, let the drama kick die. Let the drama kick, let the drama kick die. Let the drama kick, let the drama kick die.
Good evening, everybody, or good morning, or good afternoon, or good night. I don't care. It's Icy Takes again with Jeff, Zach, and Big Dave. And, you know, it's a big day for one of us, or at least a big night, because old Jefe boy on the left side of my screen is getting ready to watch his Atlanta Braves take on the LA Dodgers. And, Jeff, this is normally where I would say that the Braves are set up to break your heart, but I, just like you, I feel good about game one for the Braves. Maybe not the whole series, but game one. But before you get into your detailed analysis, tell me how your week was.
It was a good week. I just spent the last 4 days down in Deep Creek, Maryland. I was down there for a bachelor party for one of my best friends. I'm actually the best man in the wedding. You know, not a big deal or anything.
How are you?
Congrats.
But yeah, so I'm kind of recovering from the whole weekend. Everybody kind of has been asking since I got home, you know, how was your weekend? And the only way I can say is, like, my body's just like, all right, enough. You know, enough with the beer, enough with the liquor, enough with the cigars, just enough. How about a salad? How about a water? You know, so some rest, relaxation, probably going to throw some popcorn and a cola in during this great night of baseball that we have ahead of us with the always likable Atlanta Braves playing game one against the evil LA Dodgers. But we'll get into that later. But all in all, I'm good. Just kind of, like I said, trying to just recover from the weekend and taking a nice hearty baseball game tonight.
Zach, you're on the other end. You want to tell us about your week?
For once in my life, I had the exact opposite weekend of Jeff, where I was pretty like low key, didn't really drink a lot of beers, and I wanted to, but it just didn't really happen. So I spent the weekend probably lounging around doing nothing, but we got a busy weekend this weekend. I think I'm going to drink both nights, and yeah.
That's a nice way to end it. Just yeah. I mean, so, no, I basically had the same weekend as one of you, and it would be the man who just took a nice little sip back there on my screen. Jeff and I basically had the same, probably had the same BAC, at least for one night, because I was at yet another wedding, and it was something else, let me tell you. Yeah, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate the applause.
Dave, but, that wasn't for you. Max Fried's on the on TV right now. That was for you. Just trying to get pumped up game one NLCS.
I know. This is going to be one of the most bizarre shows because Jeff is going to be talking to his TV and ourselves and probably responding with his answers to the TV to our questions.
Yes. Not to cut you off again, Dave, but they just showed Magic Johnson's tweet about, like, he's rooting for the Dodgers. Like, Magic, you already got your title with the Lakers last night. Knock it off. But share with the rest of the country. Let us have this one, huh?
I love it. I love the energy so far.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to start is the NLCS. We have both the Dodgers and the Braves advance. We basically were all in complete agreement that the Braves would win last series, and they swept the Marlins. You know, the Marlins' first playoff loss ever. So it took them in three trips to the playoffs. The first time that they ever lose in the playoffs, your boys, Jeff, the Atlanta Braves. On the other end, I think both of you guys picked the Padres. I picked the Dodgers. I think we all said five games, too. Dodgers put away the Padres easily. Another sweep there. So both of these teams sweeping their way to the NLCS. Jeff, you're going to be the one that has the most passion about this. So lead us off with what you think about this series, both your homer take and your sports analyst take.
My homer take, obviously, again, the Braves are going to win. I like the lineup. I like how deep the lineup is. But I think it's going to be a very long series. I think it could go six or seven. I think the surprising thing for the Atlanta Braves and something that people might overlook is that their pitching, as far as after Max Fried and Ian Anderson, it's going to have to rely a lot on the bullpen. It's going to be a lot on the bullpen to you know, be able to shut things down, especially if Kyle Wright gets in trouble or whoever game four starter is gets in trouble. That's when they're going to have to rely on the bullpen. But for games one and two, they're going to have to get deep starts from Max Fried and Ian Anderson. So far, they have not given me a reason to be nervous about it. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. But as far as lineup goes, this is definitely a different Atlanta Braves team that that is seeing the Dodgers than what we saw 2 years ago when the Braves, which a lot of people said were way ahead of schedule, played them and almost looked out of place and lost in four games in the NLDS. So I think Braves win in, I'll say six, but I could see this going seven. I just like the Braves bullpen a lot better than the Dodger bullpen.
Well, I mean, just looking at how the entire roster is set up, you could almost flip a coin and say which offense is better, but I think the edge does go to the Braves just because of how well-rounded they've been all year. They don't have, well, I mean, they do have one guy that stood out a lot, and that was Freddie Freeman, that's like all year long, the man who should win the MVP in the National League. I mean, what, this team led the league in OPS, and, you know, not that it was, not that this meant anything, maybe to you, Jeff, but you showed me that photo where the MLB.com didn't even have the Braves lineup in the top 10 in the majors. And, you know, that could be fuel to the fire to the Braves. But I think overall the pitching is where the Dodgers have the best edge overall. And that's where I do think that they win this series. They're starting pitching, really. And Bruce Starr out of the bullpen. I think he's probably the best reliever out of anyone on either team just because of the nastiness that he can throw on the mound. With that said, I do think that the Braves have a very good shot of winning game one because of what you were saying before the show, and maybe even what you said during your answer, is that the Braves attack the fast pitches. They attack the fast, non-moving pitches and look to just drive them wherever they can and rack up the runs early. So Walker Buehler, who's been punished by the Braves before in the playoffs, I see him having a repeat start against these Atlanta Chopping Braves, and I think that the Braves take game one. However, I think the Dodgers win four of the next five after that, so I have the Dodgers in six just because if Clayton Kershaw gets on the mound twice, I think that's two wins for the Dodgers, and then you just got to fill in the blanks after that. Zach, you got anything?
I can't compete with the insight that you two just gave, but I dislike the Dodgers a lot, so I'm pulling for the Braves.
Love it. Love that answer. the one thing I do got to ask is Clayton Kershaw's health. Is it there?
I mean, I'm not sure. I can't answer that definitively. Can you?
No, I can't. That's why it's a question. Because, you know, it seems like this guy, once October rolls around, it doesn't matter if it's a 60-game season or a 162-game season. This guy, for whatever reason, either has an injury or he doesn't perform in October. And that's why, you know, Walker Buehler makes me nervous, but I feel comfortable with it. You know, Clayton Kershaw is going to come out, but the depth of the Braves lineup, I don't know if he scares me. I honestly don't know because the lineup is that deep. I mean, Dansby Swanson was one of our better hitters all year. He's batting like in the lower third of the lineup, for God's sakes. That's how deep this lineup is. I mean, they're the underdog going in against – I shouldn't say the underdog against the Reds, but a lot of people thought it would be a closer series because they were throwing Bauer, Castillo, and then Sonny Gray was waiting for game three, but we never got there. So, I mean, I think this lineup is just so deep that you know, yeah, the pitching might give up some runs maybe in games three or four, but, you know, that means the Dodgers are getting to their three and four. And, you know, maybe the Braves do a bullpen game in game four or game three, and then all of a sudden it's a 2-1 Braves lead, and then you're back on short rest with Fried or Ian Anderson or something. But I don't think this is going to be like a team's going to take two in a row or three in a row. I think this is going to split all the way down to – 6 and 7, to be honest with you.
And to try to answer your question, I think when trying to predict health, that is something that is shouldn't be in the question of predicting a series, because the way that you predict an entire season is based off everyone being healthy without any injuries the entire way. At least that's how I look at it. So, you know, the health might not be there in the first game and he can't pitch the rest of the series. And then I'm wrong just because maybe one guy got hurt. I think just based off going into this series and how everyone's feeling, I think the Dodgers can win this in six, even if they do lose this first game. Because I think Clayton Kershaw's playoff demons are slowly going away.
Why? Just because it found out that Houston cheated?
Maybe. That could be it, honestly. That could have been the entire thing, ever, even since 2008 in his first appearance in the playoffs. So, yeah, they were just waiting 9 years later to find out that the Houston Astros cheated, and now he feels better about himself in the playoffs.
Yeah, well, Acuña will take him deep, and, we'll move on, so.
I agree.
And another reason is, the Dodgers offense is good, too.
They are, 100%.
You can't discount them. But how well will that starting pitching of the Braves handle that, aside from Max Fried?
I don't know. But I know what I've seen out of the bullpen so far, and the bullpen's been the strength. So if we've learned anything in the last couple of playoffs, it's more about the bullpen than it is the starters, right?
It is, but you can't really make up ground when you're down six runs just because you had a terrible outing by one pitcher.
I mean, we've seen teams that have gone, okay, we'll have a starter for two innings. The minute he gives up a hit in the third inning, we'll go to the bullpen. And, the Braves barely used their bullpen in the first two series nonetheless. So the arms are fresh down there that they could definitely pull this off.
Yeah. If the Braves get a lead with their bullpen, I'd say if they have a lead after the seventh inning, you can almost put a guaranteed win up there for them. But if they get a couple bad performances out of starting pitchers early, then it might be time to panic. That's all.
Right. No, I gotcha.
So, I think we all got our predictions there, so we can move on to the next series, which, it maybe is a little late to predict it now that two games have already finished, but I think we were all on the same boat on this. Tampa Bay Rays taking the 2-0 series lead on the Houston Astros, and the Rays are looking like a top contender team, and they have basically a fraction of the payroll that the Yankees and the Dodgers do. Just for the sake of story, I want to see a Rays and Dodgers World Series because of the lack of pay on one team and the overly gross paid on the other team. With that being said, the Rays look awesome with how they're being managed by Kevin Cash and how he's getting the arms out there on the mound at the right time, especially at the end of Game 5 against the Yankees. Mike Brousseau, who was thrown at the head earlier in the season, September 1st, against Aroldis Chapman, had an amazing at-bat against Chapman in the bottom of the 8th in Game 5, tied up 1-1, and on the 10th pitch or 11th pitch, took one to deep left center and took that lead. What was that?
So Acuña went after Buehler first pitch fastball, like we literally just talked about. And Acuña came trotting across, not necessarily across the mound, but like across the diamond. And Walker Buehler had a few things to say to him. So keep an eye on that rivalry throughout the night.
Oh, man, it's lit.
Yeah, they were chirping at one another.
After the first pitch.
Yeah, literally went after the first pitch like we talked about.
So the Houston Astros, they win the first two games. It was a slugfest against Oakland. You thought maybe the A's had a chance after winning Game 3, maybe a reverse sweep, but the A's once again can't advance in the playoffs. Houston moves on. There's one thing about Houston that I would enjoy them winning is that after all this cheating scandal comes out and blah, 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 they get their new manager, Dusty Baker, in a shortened season. They come in and win this thing. What can you say about them now?
With Houston? Oh, Freddie Deep. Freddie Deep. Home run, Freddie Freeman. What'd I tell you? Jump on them first fastballs.
Well, we got 1-0 or 2-0?
1-0.
Yeah. Damn.
Two outs?
No, just one out. Freddie's batting second, and they've moved him up to second not too long ago. Ozuna's batting third.
I just need that Ozuna home run to hit. That's all I need.
Man, that's big. That makes me feel so good that he's not settled in. Oh, man, I love that.
Okay.
Did he chirp him when he hit a home run?
He did not, no. I think he pointed to his wife and his kid because Frey's a classy guy.
Missed opportunity, IMO.
So whoever wants to answer this first, go for it. If Houston were to end up winning it all this year, can we say anything about them now? I mean, they're still going to have cheaters. That stigma over top of them. Forever. They're always going to have that stigma.
I think it would just be treated like when the Patriots won after, like, Spygate or whatever. Like, people, I mean, they'll win it and people aren't going to be happy about it. But, I mean, yeah, it doesn't really matter what other people think. They won.
I was going to say, I think they'll forever be a hated team now. And I don't think winning a World Series will... It may be a quote-unquote legit World Series, if not one of the most difficult ones to ever win because of how the season played out. But at the same time, like, I don't know. It's like Jeff said, it's like, oh, you won, congrats. We still hate you. And they've just cemented themselves to being hated forever. So,
yeah, so I don't know. I thought maybe it'd be kind of refreshing to see that team win and then just get over it because, one, I did like this team as they were coming up through the system, as they were getting hammered early on in the decade, having like three consecutive 100-loss seasons, and then turning the page with what they were able to do within that organization, which was, I guess, cheat. But those are still very good players on that team, and they're looking to, I don't know, rectify the situation that they put themselves in. I don't know. I think either one of the teams in the AL, I wouldn't mind seeing win the World Series, but probably Tampa Bay more just because of how this team is built, which is very frugal, but very effective with the... I mean, aside from the swindling that they did with Neil Huntington, it's been very precise on how they've been able to acquire talent within that organization. So,
you know what, though? I like the Rays. I just like how they don't just play home run ball, right? Like, they... I mean, Joey Wendell is in their lineup. And I mean, is he not just like Jason Kendall? Like, when you watch that guy play, I mean, he's kind of just looking for, like, slap base hits, you know.
He doesn't wear batting gloves, right? He's that guy.
Right, no. And he has, like, that goofy open batting stance with a bat wiggle, too. Yeah. Like, throw in a side chaw of Redman in there. And, I mean, you got Jason Kendall. So, I mean, that's what I like about the Rays, though, is that they're not just there to play home run ball. Like, what a lot of teams, and admittedly the Atlanta Braves are somewhat like that, too, is that, you know, they're playing baseball how we grew up with it, with, you know, forget launch angle. We're trying to play, you know, hit the ball, somebody chase it, and we run around the bases.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the way they are set up as a baseball team is one of the teams that you admire growing up playing. Well, maybe not as you're growing up playing, but you appreciate more as you watch the game more and just look at the strategy of the game overall. Everything that they do is basically at a great level. I don't know how well their base ceiling is, but just how efficient they are all around on the board with home runs, with average, with defense, with defensive runs saved. Everything about this team is something that you look for when these teams like the Yankees and Phillies and Dodgers are grossly overpaying some of these players. Where I think the highest salary guy is probably at $7 million on this team.
On the Rays?
It's just a guess because they're one of the lowest paid teams in baseball. I think right above Pittsburgh.
As long as you don't have hope if the Rays win that the Pirates can be like that, then I would be stoked to see the Rays do something. I did actually watch.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, I did watch Game 7 in its entirety. I told you I had a pretty lame weekend. So that was actually fun to watch because obviously, what was it, Mike Brousseau, the guy that hit the home run in the bottom of the eighth? Like, that was legit electric. Like, even with no fans, like, that was just a lit moment, especially like you led on about the drama that ensued between him and Chapman earlier in the year. Like, that was crazy. And honestly, like, it's more fun watching a no-name player like that kind of struggled to get into the game as opposed to someone like Giancarlo Stanton, that's a known star, hitting a bomb like that. Like, it was truly really fun to watch. So,
do you want to know who is taking 19.64% of the payroll on Tampa Bay?
Please tell me it's like Evan Longoria.
Charlie Morton.
Man, yes. I was waiting for them to
$15 million.
Sure as hell wasn't the contract the Pirates gave him.
What was that?
Sure as hell wasn't the contract the Pirates gave him.
Absolutely not. After that is Kevin Kiermaier at $10 million. And then number three is the number that I had said. And this is all base salary that I'm going off of. Blake Snell at $7 million. So the third highest paid player on this team is at $7 million.
Jeez.
Wow.
And they're up 2-0 in the series and looking to take it away from Houston. I say relatively soon because Houston's also been beat up going into the playoffs. That's another reason I didn't see them getting past the Twins. We should have not said that because the Twins suck in the playoffs. And that's another reason I said they wouldn't get past the A's was because of them being beat up. And I thought this was finally the time for the A's to rise up. I think this is finally the wall that the Astros hit, and they're down 2-0 in the series already. So it's easier for us to say the Rays will win. I just think that Houston will pull off one in this. So give me 5 games for the Rays.
Yeah, I got the Rays in 5. I think Houston comes back, finds a way to win game 3, but I just think Tampa Bay is just too good. Their pitching is just ridiculous. I mean, half those guys are, when they're throwing 98, but it has ridiculous movement on it too, it's just almost impossible to hit. So I got Tampa in 5.
The other reason I won't say 5 is because you guys said it, so I'm going to say Tampa in 6. And Houston, I definitely think, just doesn't roll over and die. But like you said, they're pretty beat up. So I don't know. I think they squeak. What would it be?
Hey, real quick, how come nobody ever brings up how the failures the Oakland A's have in the playoffs?
Because Moneyball. Because Moneyball was a good movie.
I mean, people beat up the Twins a lot about that. I mean, they got beat up bad about losing to
the A's. At least the A's have some wins.
To the NLC or the ALCS, though, when was the last time they were in the ALCS?
Yeah, I meant just a win, not a win in a series, just a win.
Right, but the
Twins
still
have 18 consecutive losses.
But they still don't go anywhere. It doesn't matter if they won one game or no games. I mean, they're still not going anywhere.
Well, why was it that the Pirates got all the shit because they had 20 losing seasons in a row, but the Royals couldn't make the playoffs until 30 years later?
Because they won a World Series out of it?
Well, that was the year before they won the World Series.
Okay, they went to the World Series that year, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Burn.
It's just a matter of eye of the beholder, isn't it?
But yeah, between Oakland and the Twins, I don't think either of them have gone to the CS in, what, over 30 years or whatever it is?
The Twins won the World Series in 91, so we're getting into year number 30.
Yeah, so I mean, that's my thing though, is that, like, you know, they've literally had the same amount of success in the playoffs, but we continually beat up the Twins, but we don't talk anything about the Oakland A's because we made a movie about how they do analytics.
Yeah, I agree with Zach. Moneyball.
Scott Hatterberg.
Just remember, it's incredibly hard to play first base.
That's true.
Unless you're playing beer league softball, it's the best position.
I'd say catcher is, but any hoodles.
All right, so I think that'll do it for baseball. Can't wait for the World Series because, Jeff, they're doing, to my understanding, there are 0 days off in these championship series due to the bubble city. So no travel day off. It's just straight through.
Yeah, I can't believe that they're doing that for the championship series. I got it for the first two series, the DS and the wild card series or whatever. But I just don't understand. You're not giving guys a chance to really rest arms or anything like that for the bullpens. I think those guys get it much, much worse.
It's fair. Fair adjustment. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how more casual fans or fans of baseball who aren't really fans of the teams in the playoffs are starting to maybe view the playoffs this year with no days off. I don't know. I think it's an interesting take to how baseball is doing it because of the situation that we're in. So,
all right,
I'm down to test it out this season just to see how it's like. All right, that'll do it for baseball, folks. And now we get into the busy week that we had with hockey. Zach, do you want to lead this off for us? Where are we going with this?
An absolutely crazy week for the NHL, obviously, with free agency and the draft. But then also just overall what the Penguins did. They did some things that I never would have thought happened, and they did some things that needed to happen. Do you want me to just start breaking down some moves and we can kind of discuss, or do you seem like the moderator and I can just provide my expert analysis and feedback?
Well, I mean, we could try to do it that way. I mean, if we're just doing the Pens, I can try to find a link for the Pens. Like, I have a little ticker here on NBC Sports based off who went where, and we were just going to highlight some decent ones, or the higher tier ones that are,
yeah.
We're not going to talk about Jason Spezza signing a 1-year, $700,000 contract with the Maple Leafs, or should we?
I was going to say that's one of the most, the best moves I've seen. No, I'm just joking, but I mean, I think if you're going to do a broad coverage like that, we can certainly hit on that. And I'd like to start just because this one makes me super happy, because he's just going to get torched in a change of scenery. Is Henrik Lundqvist going to the Capitals to back up Samsonov? That absolutely just made me thrilled. I mean, it was pretty much announced Wednesday that he was probably going to sign there, but then for it to actually happen and to see the Photoshop pictures of him wearing a Capitals jersey, just my heart is so full, because he's just going to get absolutely burnt.
Now, with the way that the Capitals are built in comparison to the Rangers and how, you know, that we all know that they were rebuilding, so King Henry knew eventually his time was going to come to an end there. But wouldn't you say that the situation in Washington is a little more beneficial for a guy like King Henry than where he was in New York?
Yeah, I definitely don't think there's going to be a ton of pressure there, being that they have the young goaltending of Ilya Samsonov, and it will be more so a backup role, and it's a place where he hasn't spent his entire career. You know, I think his role has pretty much been assumed that he's going to be the number two guy. He's going to be out of the limelight. He's not the king of New York anymore. He's just kind of, you know, in DC now, just hoping to recover and just play another couple years and chase that cup. But yeah, I agree. The pressure's definitely off him now. And now it seems like he's more of a ride along guy than the focal point of the franchise, which he was viewed at in New York for so many years.
My question with this is, though, is that, like, does that system really help him out, though? I mean, all the teams that he played with in New York were always typically block shot teams, like defensive style teams that attacked on the rush, like the Tortorella teams that we all know, and Alain Vigneault to a point kind of played that way too. So my question is, like, is he going to be able to, even in the games that he gets into, is he going to be able to deal with the high flying Capitals? Because let's face it, that's how they're going to play when they get going again. You think Peter Laviolette's going to pull the reins on Alexander Ovechkin? You're nuts.
Yeah, I definitely see the situation of, I don't know. He definitely isn't the most fit guy for that system. But I would say, in fairness, Washington kind of upgraded their defense a little bit based on some needs. I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but they did get Justin Schultz and Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who's a solid point guy. So, I don't know. It's definitely a different system for sure. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see.
Do you think Justin Schultz got the money that he got there based off of that one spectacular season with Pittsburgh? Or do you think the money was well-deserved on what he got paid?
I feel like Washington needs to sign one ex-Penguins defenseman every offseason. So that was just them filling their quota.
I enjoyed that analysis.
No, I mean, honestly, I think I would have thought he got more, to be honest, despite him having an absolutely brutal season, just, you know, a right-handed shot, puck-moving defenseman, as they want to classify him. And yeah, I think there would be some nostalgia from the cup year, too. But to be honest, I was expecting more than $4 million a season. So, I mean, you know, he could pan out there and be great, or he could continue doing what he did here, which was absolutely brutal the last year and a half.
For as bad as he was, I thought he got a big one on free agency, though. I thought he got a lot more than I expected him to get, especially after the last 2 years that he's had and the injury history he's had. For him to get $4 million, I thought that was a big one for him.
Well, I mean, that's why I was asking the question, did he maybe get overpaid? Because As I did want to point out, it's funny, the two sports that we cover are some of the most overpaid athletes in all of the world. And then we have hockey, where we just think $4 million might be too much for one player.
That's fair.
But yeah, I think Justin Schultz, does he have a chance to maybe reclaim some of the great moments that he had in that cup year with the Pens and transfer it into Washington, depending on who he's paired with? Like, are we going to see him maybe potentially get 15 goals in a full 82-game season if he were to play about at least 80% of the games? The power play has always been pretty dominant, and that's always because of Alexander Ovechkin. But you get another powerful shot like Justin Schultz out there, it's another weapon.
I don't think he'll sniff that top power play unit.
I was going to say, I expect him to get more points, obviously, than what he's had in Pittsburgh, but I don't think he cracks that top power play unit. If anything, he'll be a secondary assist guy. But
That's fair. All right, what other moves we got?
Let's see. One of the ones I wanted to hit on, and it was wild. It was actually Avalanche to finish the joke. Came through on Saturday night. I mean, we'll go back to free agent signings, but this one really caught me off guard. Was Chicago acquiring Brandon Saad for Nikita Zadorov, the big defenseman from Colorado? That move was so out of left field for me that I was just like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I like Zadorov as a defenseman there for Colorado, just because I feel like he added a little bit of sandpaper to that team and kind of gave Nathan MacKinnon, Rantanen, Landeskog, like the skill guys, kind of gave them like a protection almost. Not necessarily that like he'd be a goon, but like he wasn't afraid to, you know, lay a big check right back or, you know, go out and get into a fight or whatever. So that, I agree with you. That came out of way left field. I don't even know if Brandon Saad really has the luster that he once had earlier in the decade.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. It's almost like I feel like they didn't need him, but at the same time, that's such a weapon to just have if he can ever find his form a little bit. Just on that team that's so deep because of all those team-friendly deals and those guys that are still on their ELCs, and even Nathan MacKinnon being one of the best contracts in the league. Like, that's just a nice option to have it and as a depth role. So, I mean, I was kind of shocked by it, but I think it was a good move for them.
Where do you put him, though? Like, that's my question. Like, where do you put him where he'll be effective?
I envision him personally, and I'm not going to act like I know their lines off by heart, but I could see him being a lot like a Brian Rust, where he just slides in and out of the lineup, can play bottom six, top six, wherever. He just kind of floats around to make it work.
Do you think they break up the top three?
Cool.
Where they break up Branton, Landeskog, and MacKinnon, and just they all each have their own line? Quite similar to like what Pittsburgh did with Crosby, Malkin, Kessel.
I think they'll at least try it, because I think getting guys like Saad, more complimentary players, allows you to try that a little bit more. But I mean, I feel like those lines have worked for them, and why fix what's not broken? But at the same time, you know, Colorado can give a lineup so many different looks that, you know, I feel like they'll at least experiment.
With the way the Colorado ended their season last year, do you expect them to, we're already a week or 4 days into the free agency, and it's going to slow down a lot. There's not going to be as much movement as what we just saw the last couple of days. Do we see any more bigger trades or bigger signings by Colorado based off what we've already seen?
I can't believe they haven't jumped into the goaltending.
Yeah, I was literally about to say, I can't believe they didn't get a goal yet.
I'm so shocked by that. And maybe, because I think they were rumored to get to be in the Taylor Hall sweepstakes too, and this deal with Saad, maybe that saved them some money to go out and get a goaltender. But I mean, how much is left out there? We said how saturated the goaltending market is. I don't even know if there's anybody out there willing to go out and, you know, get a ton of money for.
See, I mean, go ahead.
I was gonna say Jacob Markstrom already got signed because of the Holtby deal going to Vancouver. Markstrom was available, but I think Calgary signed him.
Yeah, he got 6 for 36 in Calgary, which is more than I thought he'd get.
But that could have been one of the options for Colorado, was Markstrom right there.
especially with Britton Holtby, 1-4-2 in Vancouver. Yeah. Clearly, Britton Holtby wasn't looking for a long-term deal in free agency with the market, but
that was a great deal for Vancouver. Oh, yeah, my God.
Vancouver won that.
I thought for sure that they if that was what was going for Britton Holtby, that Colorado would have been in on him.
Yeah, and honestly, another goalie I expected before the Stars retained him was Khudobin, because while he was an elite, you know, guy during the playoffs, he's still pretty much a career backup. So you would have thought in Colorado, maybe an expanded role with that kind of team, you could get him pretty cheap. But he stayed with the Stars, and I think he's making like $3.5 million a year or something like that. I definitely want to call. Oh, go ahead.
This is my last question, and then I do want to move on. Khudobin, is he now the starter with Ben Bishop there because of what happened to Bishop in the playoffs, or?
It's got to be some form of Q96.1 freak show goalie controversy, but it has to be something like that, right? Like, I mean, Khudobin got
kind of.
And Bishop's making a lot of money too to be on the bench. It's essentially setting up for another Fleury Murray situation without the winning a cup part.
I was about to say, like, this is basically Fleury Murray, except in Dallas. So, that's all I wanted to ask, is just to see if Khudobin's performance was good enough for him to get that starting role. But, you know, we still have two more months to discuss that. So, just wanted to see if you guys had an opinion on that yet.
If you're Colorado, do you take a flyer on Ben Bishop, despite injury issues and the whatnot that he's had?
I would. I don't know what he's making. Is he signed to some team-friendly deal, or is it pretty exorbitant?
I think you might be absorbing some deals, but, I mean, if Dallas wants to get that off their books, they retain some of it. I mean, you get a goaltender who's a big goaltender, and he can move the puck pretty well, too, to guys like Cale Makar, Nate MacKinnon, et cetera, et cetera. I would take a flyer on him. Just see what his value is to Dallas right now.
Well, His cap hit's 4.9 million, but his base salary this year, the 2020-2021 season, is $1 million, and his signing bonus is 2.5. So I think the Stars want to hold on to that.
Yeah, team friendly deal like that. Yeah.
So that, I don't think they're gonna give that up freely unless Colorado's willing to pay up on their end. Let's move on.
So one of the ones I want to talk about, just because it's hilarious and I still laugh all the time, is the fact that a team, the New York Rangers, who are rebuilding, in quotes, signed Jack Johnson. They actually gave him a contract to play hockey for them, like to play a sport that we just watched him suck at for upwards of 2 years. They gave him a contract to play for them on a rebuilding team.
And they're talking about like Tony D'Angelo playing with them too, which is absurd.
Jesus, that has got to be the worst idea ever.
Him and I think he was that other defenseman that they have, that I think Adam Fox, it was rumored he might play with Adam Fox too, which is like, just kill their careers now.
Could we just buy the New York Rangers a traffic cone and say, here, this is what you paid a contract for, and then just throw it at them?
Well, just go down Broadway. I'm sure you can find a ton of them.
I just want to say, though, that it's super funny, you know, every time we'd write a Rangers game day, we'd kind of trash the Rangers, and like some of the comments we'd get back or see, and, you guys are paying Jack Johnson. Well, bitch, the tables have turned. and now you are paying Jack Johnson. I mean, yeah, we still are, so it's whatever, but now you are actually paying him to be on your team.
Him to be off of our team.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Had to highlight that.
Do you think Jack Johnson's agent is a miracle worker because he will be bought out of this contract as well, and now he'll be making money off that and off the Penguins?
I literally don't know how they did that, like how his agent put that together. Like all you needed to do was YouTube Jack Johnson 2020 and just make sure you typed in "not the singer," and then you could see how bad he was on the ice. And somehow the Rangers were like, "Oh man, he looks good. Like, let's give him a contract."
So, like, does Jim Rutherford get off the hook then for that contract then?
No,
on the simple fact that another team thinks Jack Johnson is a serviceable defenseman. That it wasn't just Jim Rutherford.
But not for the length of the contract that Rutherford gave out.
Yeah, the length of the contract is what does it for me. But it was also that snide little remark he made when he said, quote unquote, he knew why he was being benched in Columbus. Did you? Because you just found that out for Pittsburgh. Like, you know, albeit 2 years later, but still, just that whole quote and how, like, everyone was like, hey, this might be a bad move, Jim. You shouldn't do this. And he's like, no, we're good. And sure enough, he's not on the team anymore.
Did you win back-to-back cups? I didn't think so.
That's literally what Rutherford's done for the last 2 years, is just flex that. But
he did the coach from the Waterboy when he tells them that they're going to take a knee three times in a row, then punt. And the quarterback looks at him like, you're nuts, and he just shows him two rings and says, go, 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 go. How do you like my new offense? That pretty much Jim said the same thing, except how do you like my new defense? We give up goals all the time.
I mean, that's a pretty good comparison. Let's hit on one that happened tonight, actually finalized. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Alex Pietrangelo is leaving St. Louis for the Vegas Golden Knights. He is going to get $8.8 million a year over 7 years, and this contract includes a full no-movement clause.
You got to hope a lot of those guys in Vegas didn't buy, they rented, because you got to think a lot of guys are on the move, right?
Nate Schmidt, Fleury, maybe Pacioretty. Those are just guys I'm thinking right off the top of top of my head. And they were supposed
You know what, too? Because you only get, what, two buyouts a year, right? Or just one?
I think it's two this year, but normally one.
So if they have to trade any of these guys, and I can't mean this more from the heart than anything, I hope the Vegas Golden Knights get bent over in any trade that they're trying to get rid of cap, because of what they did to why is Duvall grabbing his hamstring there? That ain't good. His back, yeah. But for what they did at the expansion draft, and they got all these picks and, you know, all these great players because of the expansion draft and everything, I hope every GM says, what you are offering us now still isn't good enough. Make it better. Because I want to see this team finish last, you know, start having to suffer like every other team has had to do when they came in the league. So that's all I got to say about that.
I agree with you, but I listened to an interesting perspective on that actually today, because I kind of feel the same way you did. But it was kind of like, and I think this is why a lot of people and teams hate Vegas, is the fact that since they were formed, they kind of knew how they wanted to build the team out. Like, it wasn't like they were already in cap hell from previous regimes and previous things. So once it got to go time, like, they knew what it took to win in the league based on, you know, other teams' recent successes and the fact that they could pretty much swindle deals for teams for them to not take team's best players. And some of those degenerates happen to be stars for them. So I guess what I'm trying to say is it laid a nice base for them. And they haven't had to deal with these brutal contracts of years past, because they essentially started fresh with an entire team. So that's why all their contracts look unbelievable. And you almost think a salary cap doesn't apply, whereas they're just moving guys around. And they got so lucky on some of the things that they've done, because they built a team with the current vision of what the league is winning with.
Yeah. And I think
Didn't the Penguins essentially give the Golden Knights a first-round pick to make sure that they picked Marc-Andre Fleury?
Yeah, that's the deals I'm talking about. Like, even what Minnesota did, so they took Alex Tuch. I mean, it's the same thing. But it's getting to the point now where it's almost like they're playing, like, free agency on like, NHL, where, like, they're making trades just so they can get the best guy on the market. Like, it just seems like they're not trying to run, like, any kind of cap system or anything like that. It's just, oh, this is the guy we want. We're going to trade you, and get, like, a seventh back, you know, so we can go get Alex Pietrangelo.
Well, speaking of some deals that the Knights might have to make, I don't know if you saw the latest Rob Rossi tweet, and he's not exactly a source of news, but there is mutual interest between the Penguins and Fleury, and the fact that, obviously, Pietrangelo getting locked up in Vegas got to make you think that they need to be cap compliant here fairly soon. The tweet says, wrote a lot about it last week, would rather have you just read those stories, but bottom line, Penguins and Marc-Andre Fleury are mutually interested in him returning to Pittsburgh. Need another team to take on part of his cap hit. Remains true even after GMJR's moves last week. So, for what it's worth.
Also breaking news, because, you know, we're breaking news podcast here. Elliot Friedman 10 minutes ago, Nate Schmidt to Vancouver for a third round pick. So,
oh, well, there's one of the dominoes.
That's one domino to fall. And I would bet that they're going to buy out Marc-Andre Fleury, right? That's the only way they're going to move that contract.
Here's the thing.
If Carolina wasn't going to take it for, what was it, 33% and a second and some, didn't they have a third in there too? They're not going to take really that. Pretty much with that contract, they're telling you you have to buy it out.
That's insane. I just honestly, I don't know what Vegas next year's pick situation is, but the Penguins probably have about 2.5 mil to work with. If they would take on 2 mil of Fleury's 7 point whatever he's owed, and maybe get a first or second round pick, how do you say no to that deal? Like, obviously, if you let him get bought out, you're going to be bringing him in on a similar deal anyway, so why don't you? Well, I mean, obviously, depending on if he'd sign for that, but I mean, if mutual interest is mutual interest, so I mean, I don't know. Gotta imagine he can't expect to make bank there again.
So I think it all just depends, like, on this contract. Obviously, that's what you guys both have said. But I'm not opposed to having Marc-Andre Fleury back on this roster, back on this team. However, it needs to be, what do you give up in return? Or do you just basically say, hey, you know, give us Marc-Andre Fleury and we'll pay 40% of the contract? Like, what could be a fair trade for the Penguins to dive in on this?
I don't think there's a trade, though. I don't think that's how you get it done if you're the Penguins. It has to be they buy him out and, you know, he'll still get a major chunk of what he's going to get paid. And then you get him at, I don't know, a million, maybe a little bit more. And that's how you get him to Pittsburgh. Other than that, I just don't see how Pittsburgh can take on it. A big chunk of that contract.
Yeah, I definitely think, I don't know. They'd either need to just retain the 2 mil and Vegas eats the rest, which is, he'd be signing a deal similar to that in Pittsburgh. Or he needs to get bought out. And it obviously has to be one or the other for him to even think about coming here, because there's so many other teams with way better cap position that could fit him. It's just a matter of if he wants to go there or what they decide to do.
If Fleury gets bought out in Vegas, is there a chance Colorado swoops in and tries to take him?
Could be.
It's stupid not to give it a try, in my opinion.
Exactly. I'm just trying to think of what will happen, not really like what is best case scenario. But I think best case would be Fleury to play in Colorado with the way that team is built. I think that, Jeff, it could be our favorite team once again, making it to the Cup and winning it this year.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Because if it's not Pittsburgh, it better be Colorado.
Well, I have to ask, though, and this will transition perfectly into the Penguins' moves, is right now you're rolling out Tristan Jarry and Casey DeSmith. Casey DeSmith was pretty solid in his time in Pittsburgh 2 years
ago.
Don't
try and talk yourself into it. It won't work.
I'm not. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here because I've already talked myself into it. I'm pretty sold on if the deal was friendly that I would take him back, but the role needs to be established that he's a backup and not someone that would come in and split time or even, you know, eventually steal time. I think the role would need to be defined before he gets here. But I definitely feel like if Tristan Jarry's game goes to shit, and I mean, let's be real, I mean, he's still pretty unproven despite, you know, playing as well as he did last year. I really worry if Casey DeSmith becomes your quote unquote guy.
I couldn't agree with you more, Zach. I thought you were going a different way with it. My only fear is what if Tristan Jarry isn't what we thought he was?
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden, Casey DeSmith is your number one goaltender. That terrifies me.
Exactly. And do keep in mind that Tristan Jarry was in front of Matt Murray on the depth chart way back in the day. So something happened, and I don't necessarily think it was Murray elevating his game so much as it was Jarry just kind of fading out a little bit. So, you know, can he carry the workload in a full 82-game schedule, especially if it's going to be as condensed as, you know, it's going to, as the league's saying, with games starting up January 1st? That scares me.
I'm just still so, I'm trying to think of the right word. I don't think frazzled is the right word. So Damn. Confused on how they can try to get all 82 games in this next upcoming season.
Like, I don't think
there's... A condensed 60-game schedule, but I don't see how you fit 82 in and try to get back on track for 2021 and 2022.
I think they've rolled out the 82-game season, have they not?
Oh, did they? I haven't seen that if they did. I mean, to Dave's point, yeah, Because at some point, if you're trying to eventually resume a normal schedule, you're going to need to shave time or rush play somewhere, somehow. So, I mean.
This would be the perfect year to do it then, because aren't we, the NHL has announced January 1st, 2021 as their regular season opener, right?
That's the goal as of right now. Yeah.
So if you are looking to get back on track to maybe play in what the usual time frame is, which is like what, the first Wednesday of October or the second Wednesday of October, every year is usually when the first puck drops, then you need to condense this season game wise, as well as the scheduling of these games as well. Like, we had, how many games were played in the strike shortened season? The most recent one, like 48 games.
48,
like
48.
A 3.5 month stretch. Was it a 3.5 month stretch?
Or yeah, about that. Yeah, because the playoffs, I think, started on time.
So you could get, starting on January 1st, you could do another 48 game season and then get back into the grind of the playoffs and have your, I guess we can use the finger quotes here, normal routine of getting back into the usual place where you start. So with that being said, trying to go off of the original question of carrying a whole season, you might not have to carry a full season if you're Tristan Jarry. It might only be you play 34 out of 48 games. So it could be a blessing to see this be like the test to see if Tristan Jarry can handle, you know, the full season for the Penguins this year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And to your point, I mean, I definitely, if the season's a little bit more trimmed down like that, then I definitely think that bodes well in his favor. But still, nonetheless, I mean, we always talk about wasting years with Crosby and Malkin, but say the goaltending game goes to hell, I think maybe you have one or two more good years of them left. And, you know, I'd hate for goaltending to be the reason the team doesn't get to the top. I mean, it seems they've always underwhelmed in other aspects. And as I think we'll get into here shortly, I feel like they've improved a little bit. And it's like, I would hate to see them burn out because they're goaltending. So that's the only reason why I could see Mapp or another veteran goalie. But I mean, I don't have any names right now other than him via solid insurance policy back there.
Not Antti Raanta.
Or Niemi.
Anyway.
I guess the only thing really left for me to do or for us to discuss is just touch on the Penguins signings that they did instead of signing one or two very relevant players, they chose to sign about 16 third or fourth line guys for league minimum or close to it. So, I mean, if you don't mind, we can touch on those and see if it actually, what our thoughts are.
It reeks of we're going to throw stuff at the wall for the bottom six and hope it sticks.
I did like the Evan Rodriguez deal.
Yeah, the Evan Rodriguez deal. The only thing about that, though, is that, like, I saw so many writers say, well, the coaching staff loved how Evan Rodriguez and Sam Lafferty were.
They loved him so much he didn't play against Montreal.
Right, exactly. Like, if you loved him so much, why the hell did old man Patrick Marleau play ahead of him?
And to your point, because I still think Rodriguez could be very sound. This is where Jeff, we discussed how I don't think the coach and GM are on the same page. Maybe Rutherford loves the guy, but the coaching staff didn't want to play him, or they chose to play a veteran guy like Marleau over him. But like, I don't know. I like the signing because I think it has a lot of potential. But at the same time, I mean, I guess we can discuss the other names, but then I'll give you my final thought on that. But yeah, I didn't hate it.
Again, they pretty much stayed to form. Oh, what a play by Ozzie there. Yep, perfect. One out in the bottom of the second. The one thing that I just wonder, though, it just they stayed true to that they're probably not going to be a cap team this year. It was pretty much well known throughout the media that they're not going to spend to the cap. And it seems like a lot of teams, excluding Vegas, apparently, is the only team that's not spending – all the way to the cap, I don't think they have a plan for the bottom four, the fourth line, which is okay because you shouldn't be married to your bottom four. You should never have a plan for that. But, I mean, you know, the guys they signed, it just reeks of if somebody gets hurt or somebody gets COVID, we have a backup plan. Other than that, nothing was really like a, well, boy, I'm glad we signed that guy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the money could have been allocated better to bring in one or two guys that were, I don't want to say more relevant, but could have affected the team a little bit more. But I mean, I would like to see Rodriguez actually have a role in, on this team. I mean, I'm not going to act like I sat there and spied on his training camps, but I mean, like, you know, when you hear the buzz from everyone else and you see that he can slide up and down the lineup, like, that could be a steal if he's utilized the right way, but that's the key thing.
Well, aren't most of these signings by the Penguins because of the lowering of the cap because of what had happened with the loss of revenue with COVID-19? I mean, I did not expect the Penguins to sign anybody, I don't know, like top tier this offseason, but they're looking to just stay underneath the cap so they don't have to, you know, I don't know what it is compared to baseball with the luxury tax or anything else like that, but they got to stay underneath that cap because, you know, it's illegal. I don't know.
No, they had, so I guess I'll give my gripe out right now. They had the salary cap was lowered. It wasn't increasing because of COVID and the loss of revenue. But that said, I mean, you know, this still goes back to some of GM Jauer's deals, and he put himself in this predicament to not have the cap. Like, eating half of or whatever he ate of Bjugstad's salary just to get him off the team, that's one. Bringing in Matheson for Hornquist, you didn't shed as much cap as you would have liked. There, and just like other little deals like that he's making up for. I mean, Johnson's buyout's on the books, but I kind of was looking at some guys out there, and like, I don't know, I would have liked to have seen Kyle Turris maybe have a shot at that third line center deal. He signed a pretty team friendly deal. I think it was like 2 years for $3.5 million or something very cheap and affordable. Wenberg was another one I wanted. And same with Dominic Cahoon. I feel like Dominic Cahoon could have been really good here if the coach didn't hate him, but he joined the Mike Sullivan anti Mike Sullivan club very early on.
I think that's a big club too.
Oh, it's a big club, and it's a growing list. I mean, you know, but nonetheless, that's I don't have a problem with any of the guys they signed. But in fairness, I would have rather them made one signing, like one Torres or one Wenberg, as opposed to giving out, you know, 700K here, 750K here. I mean, I understand why you did it because strength in numbers to an extent. And if anyone goes down, and some of these guys weren't terrible, but I mean, I feel like I knew a lot more what I was getting with Turris or Cahoon or even a Wenberg. So,
anything else to discuss in the NHL world with what happened last week? Noteworthy?
Good for Buffalo getting Taylor Hall. I mean, good. In all reality, I mean, I know the counter argument would be like, well, they got Jeff Skinner. Yeah, Jeff Skinner wasn't that great in Carolina. Honestly, he kind of fell off after last year as well, too. So, I mean, good for Buffalo. They have two bona fide superstars there now between the two. So, good for them. We'll see if it works. If not, like we talked about before the show, I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up getting flipped or you know, he just doesn't resign there or whatever. But, I was happy to see that he went to a team like Buffalo and not like the Rangers or like someone who's being absolutely spoiled again. I mean, that's easy for us to say because we've been spoiled for how long with free agents and big name guys. But I was really happy to see he went to Buffalo.
Yeah, that was good. Definitely not a team I expected him to go to, and I guess one of the final things I want to call out is Matt Murray getting his deal in Ottawa, signs a 4-year, $25 million contract with them. So we managed to flip Matt Murray, and get the former NFL coach or current NFL coach and legend John Gruden, prospect, a pick that we took a goalie with, which I thought was hilarious. Matt Murray got his deal. So, I mean, that kind of worked out way better than I expected for the Penguins. And for, you know, I truly thought that could have been absolutely disastrous the longer that deal waited. So good for that.
How about Ottawa not negotiating a contract before that deal was done?
Yeah. Oh my God. I was like, wait, this isn't like going to be a sign in trade kind of thing. Like you don't have anything ready for him to go. Like that was wild.
Yeah, I like what Ottawa's starting to build there. They're starting to get their legs underneath them. I don't know if they'll compete within the first 2 years of Murray's contract, but I wouldn't be shocked if years 3 and 4 of that deal that they start becoming a pretty heavy team.
That's fair. I also want to shout out real quick to Calgary Flames for signing Chris Tanev to a 4-year, $18 million deal, because that was absolutely a contract that Rutherford was waiting to overpay. So shout out to the Calgary Flames for snagging him up before Rutherford could make that work.
I thought your shout out was going to be them going back to them retro jerseys, because how sick. Oh,
well,
that
too. Well,
them and Ottawa. Right? Bringing both of them up.
Well, oh, I love Ottawa's, man. But real quick, while you're going to shout out the Calgary Flames, I also want to shout them out for signing Zach Rinaldo to a 1-year deal. So I'm looking forward to seeing a suspension in the first few games next year.
Yeah, he'll fight Zach Cassian in opening night.
Absolutely.
You willing to put money on that, Zach, if you can find a bet that Zach Rinaldo gets a suspension in the first 5 games?
He needs to make the lineup first, but if he cracks that lineup, I'm putting that bet down.
Read the fine print. If the player being bet on is in the starting lineup, if not, it's voided.
yeah, because that's one thing. Rinaldo might not make the cut, but then again, Calgary is Calgary. So,
all right, boys, I think that about does it right there. Yes.
Yeah, I think we're good. We covered everything.
Jeff, I'm assuming you're going to give your MVP of the week to Freddie Freeman for starting off the game hot.
No. I mean, I'll go first. It is Atlanta Braves related, and in fact, it is the Atlanta Braves, because I will say I have not been this excited to watch playoff baseball in so long, where you can almost taste what you dream about your team doing all year. So I will say my MVP is not just Freddie Freeman, but all the Atlanta Braves, whether it's Max Fried all the way down to Charlie Culberson, who never sees the field. These guys bring me so much happiness, because I'll be the first to admit I jumped ship from the Pirates. I don't back how they look at building a team the way Atlanta does. You know, they rebuilt from where, I mean, Dave, when we did the show together, you used to rip on me all the time that they were in dead last or they stunk or whatever, but I mean,
I had to take advantage of those times.
You did 100%, and I don't blame you for it, but that's the difference between the Atlanta Braves and the Pittsburgh Pirates for me, is the Braves rebuilt, they rebuilt within their system, and then once they had their system come up, they built around those prospects. And that's something we never saw with the Pirates, and that's the difference between why I was able to jump ship to a team that, you know, is successful, they know how to win, and when they see the opportunity to go win, they go for it. And that's why I'm just so happy right now, because those years in college, it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal, but to see it get built up and to see us now in game one of the National League Championship Series, up 1-0, by the way, with our best player going yard on the number one pitcher for the Dodgers, it couldn't be better. I hope the Braves pull this off and we're in the World Series and we're talking about it next week, that, you know, Braves are in the World Series and I'm skipping all kinds of other commitments that I have, because this doesn't happen too often.
First time since 2001, I believe, the Braves are in the NLCS.
Chipper Jones was our number 4 hitter in the lineup. That's all that needs to be said.
I'm going to give mine to weddings. There's a lot of alcohol in those things, and I like to enjoy that, as well as having the people around me that I am there to have a good time with. I've done 3 in the past 4 weekends. Looking to take a couple weekends off before I'm back on another one, so shout out to MVP is weddings.
I'm going to do an MVP and an LVP this week. MVP is 100% going to be Sheetz, because I've had it for dinner the last 2 nights. I'm probably going to have it a 3rd night, to be honest with you. It kind of just depends on how lazy I am in terms of, like, it's dinner time, what do I want? So we're trending that way this week. We actually, Autumn and I leave for New York on Friday, so we're trying to save some money this week. So instead of buying steaks at the grocery store to make, I'm just going to take the cheap way out and get MTOs. So MVP Sheetz, LVP, our oldest Chapman, because he's a scumbag and he's a loser. So.
Oh, man.
That's fair. That's fair. No, I like that one. That's back-to-back years where Chapman has the home run hit off of him, which leads to the Yankees losing a series.
And he just stares at that dumb, stupid smirk that he has. I'm going to beat him up, piece of shit. Okay.
Jeff, we got to set this up, a fight between Aroldis Chapman and Zach Morris.
Well, I mean, Zach's not a girl, so you're all right.
Oh, he said it, not me. I didn't want to go there.
I mean, it was the low-hanging fruit, and the troll of the whole podcast, you know, set it up. So, I mean, we had to, right, Dave? Like, someone had to.
I mean, we could put a wig on Zach and see what happens.
Oh, my God. All right, end this.
Dress him in drag, and he'll be upset.
Oh my All right. God. This is where I love where the show just goes to shit. You've been listening to Icy Takes with Zach, Jeff, and Big Dave. You can like us on Facebook at Icy Takes with Zach, Jeff, and Big Dave. Follow us on Twitter at Icy Takes, I-C-E-Y Takes, all together one word because that's the way we like to spell it. Follow the personal Twitter at Big_Dave52.
At ZachMorris82.
At JChrist_51, Acuna's at the plate, so let's just wrap this up.
Like our Lord and Savior, oh man, not Acuna Jr., but you can, I hope you enjoyed the episode, and now it's falling apart, so it was a good time for it to end. So we enjoy you all. We'll see you next week. Until then, stay icy.
Go Braves.